Honor, I'm Elaine Winters, attorney for Christopher Smith, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes. Thank you. This is an appeal from Mr. Smith's conviction for unlawful possession of a firearm. In Washington, Article 1, Section 7 prevents the police from invading a person's private affairs without the lawful authority. In a case involving, this case involves an investigative stop, under which the stop is lawful only if the law enforcement officer has a reasonable and articulable suspicion based upon specific and objective facts that the person seized has committed or is about to commit a crime. Our argument is simply that the facts are not present in this case. Mr. Smith was riding a bicycle in his neighborhood, in a residential neighborhood, and the police officer said that he saw him looking into the windows of cars. This simply does not support a Terry stop. First of all, I think it's important to point out that the officer did not say that he saw Mr. Smith stop his bicycle, get off his bicycle, touch any of the cars, try to open a window. He simply was looking at the cars as he rode by. This occurred at about 8:30 at night in September, so it was the sun was down, but it had not been, it had been down for about an hour. There were still people on the sidewalk. There was at least one pedestrian. There was traffic going by.
You can advocate that the reason he was looking into cars was so he wouldn't, bicyclists know the term, get doored, which is about a 3-foot clearance. So if he's on the sidewalk, why is he biking within 3 feet of parked cars? It would make sense, and this is taking your hypothetical.
Right.
On the street, you would want to maintain a clearance of the door, because generally drivers get in and out of the door on the passenger or on the driver's side. So why does that make sense if you're bicycling on the sidewalk where you have a pretty wide berth?
Yeah. I don't know if the record shows how big, if there was a median in between or grass in between the sidewalk and the car. So we don't know how big it is. But I think having talked to a bicyclist recently, it's one thing we need that a bicyclist wouldn't instinctually looks at cars, and I think probably the first thing is to look at the car and then figure out, is it moving, is it parked, what's the danger here, because it is dangerous for them. They are much smaller. So whether he was in the danger of being doored or whether he was just checking them out, I think it's not unreasonable for a bicyclist to be looking at the cars. And all we have is looking in the car,
the record shows additional evidence that's unique to this particular case under these circumstances, because the officer also personally knew that there were a number of car prowls in the area more recently that he had investigated.
But it's important that he did not indicate there were any car prowls that night or that recently. It was 8:30. The officer had just come on duty, and when he said recently, he meant in the past. It wasn't that evening that he had seen them, that he had taken the reports. And I don't know. I'm a little bit confused about how you can car prowl while you're on a bicycle. But
you get off.
Yeah, you get off, and how do you carry your goods away? I don't know, especially when it's your own neighborhood. Nonetheless, I think it is important that there were no reports that evening, and that there was traffic about, and that he was riding a bicycle.
Let's say that we disagree with your analysis.
Thank you. I mean, not
you want to talk
part two. Let's go ahead.
I understand. Let's talk about bike helmets. And my question is, do we need to get to the bike helmet issue if we determine that there was a valid Terry stop based on what we've just been talking about?
Right. If the court concludes that the Terry stop was valid, I think it does have to reach the issue of whether the officer had the authority to issue a civil infraction for the bicycle helmet.
Why?
The court found that as an alternative basis for the stop.
Yes, alternative. So if we agree that it was a valid Terry stop.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I wasn't communicating.
No,
if
I think
we
that was
find there was a Terry stop validly based on the bicycle door business, car prowl, etc., do we need to reach the issue about the authority to stop on behalf of the King County ordinance?
I think the way that the trial court decided the case, you don't.
Okay.
I think he indicated that was an independent basis.
Okay. Now, next question. Let's assume that we follow that path. One of your other arguments is pretext. What facts are you relying on for pretext, given the fact that the trial court did not make a determination in your favor on that issue? And usually the absence of findings of fact in your favor mean that's a finding against you.
Although the findings were prepared by the prevailing party, and it seems that if the prevailing party had prevailed on that issue, that they would have prepared findings to that effect. Anyway, I'm going to the... What the officer testified to is that he stopped Mr. Smith based on a number of things. Some of those the court found weren't a proper basis, like whether the defendant appeared surprised or whether he, the court didn't base the Terry stop on those on that evidence at all. And he also said there was also a number of traffic. He said that he also mentioned the bike helmet and the possible light infraction. Again, the court didn't find the light infraction because there was contested testimony about that. In Areola, the court upheld a stop.
Well, before we get there, let's talk about Ladson. Why does this constitute a Ladson situation?
I think it constitutes a Ladson situation because he saw the bike helmet violation immediately, and he did not make a decision to stop him based on that. He made a decision to stop him based upon what he said was all of these circumstances. But primarily it was that he thought a crime, he didn't say it was necessarily vehicle prowling, but he thought a crime was occurring or was about to occur.
Okay, a crime.
Not a citation, not an infraction.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is.
So you're relying on that testimony, and then you get to Areola. And how do you deal with that?
I think I deal with Areola by the fact that in that case, the trial court and the the officer testified specifically that he intended to stop the person for the muffler infraction no matter what. That he would have done that no matter what. And that's not what the officer said here, and the court certainly didn't make a finding of that here. The court found that was valid, but he didn't say that was the basis for his stop. No.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jennifer Joseph, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County, appearing for the State of Washington.
Could you answer the last part first, the pretext and Areola, et cetera?
Yes. It's the State's position that the pretext argument is completely inapposite. It's a misapplication of the law. Pretext, by definition, and this is according to Ladson, is a false reason used to disguise a true motive. Deputy Callahan was always clear from the get-go that his motive was to investigate the car prowling incident. There was no effort to disguise that, and so it's our position that pretext is completely inapposite. But even if you could, even if you were interested in addressing that in this case, you could never find pretext here. As our Supreme Court indicated in Areola, there can be a mixed motive stop that doesn't run afoul of the pretext rule. So if there is an officer who has is primarily motivated to investigate a hunch, as long as he or she has makes an independent and conscious determination that the stop is reasonably necessary in furtherance of traffic safety and the general welfare, the stop is okay, even if he really wants to investigate some separate criminal activity. In this case, we have the testimony of Deputy Callahan, who says he routinely stops bicyclists who are not wearing helmets. He does not always cite them, and he didn't cite Mr. Smith in this case, but he does give them a warning, and that is within his discretion in the bicycle regulation itself. It gives officers discretion whether to enforce the provision or not. And so Deputy Callahan's desire to enforce the helmet law would be a valid basis to stop Mr. Smith on its own.
And you assume in your answer that the law is applicable in Shoreline?
I believe it is applicable in Shoreline.
What if we disagree with that?
Well, if you disagree with that, I think you still don't need to reach the pretext issue, because Deputy Callahan never tried to say that I stopped him for the bicycle helmet infraction and then became aware of the car prowling. He was always clear that he was investigating the car prowling. There's no, even if you find that there was not sufficient basis to stop him for the car prowling, and even if you decide that the helmet law didn't apply in Shoreline, pretext still doesn't come into the equation. So, going to the car prowling basis. The undisputed facts are that Deputy Callahan saw Mr. Smith riding his bicycle after dark along the sidewalk and peering into the car windows. He wasn't just looking into the car windows to see if the cars were occupied. He was peering into the windows. And as you pointed out, the officer was also aware of a rash of recent car prowls in the area and had himself investigated some just within blocks of this incident. So we believe that, and the trial court found that was a sufficient basis to justify a Terry stop. Now, for the first time on appeal, Mr. Smith argues that his conduct in looking in the car windows was just innocent, innocuous, you know, an effort to maintain bicycle safety. And as an initial matter, it's not a surprise that this argument appears for the first time on appeal, because it's completely inconsistent with Mr. Smith's testimony at the suppression hearing. He testified, as you pointed out, that he was riding on the sidewalk, and he also testified that there were no cars parked along the street other than the two directly in front of his own home. So, even if his conduct was purely innocent and motivated by bicycle safety, that does not invalidate the stop, because an activity that's consistent with both criminal activity and non-criminal activity can still be the basis of a valid Terry stop, and the officer is entitled to rely on his experience and training in evaluating the arguably innocuous facts. Deputy Callahan testified he was familiar with car prowls, he'd investigated a number of them, and he believed that based on everything that he observed Mr. Smith doing, that was the criminal activity that was underfoot. And this case is not like Martinez. In that case, the police stopped somebody just on the basis of looking nervous late at night and having a brisk pace. And I believe it was Division 3 of this court said, you know, the problem is that there's no connection between the defendant and any particular criminal activity, and just looking like you're up to no good is not sufficient basis to be stopped. Here we have that connection. Deputy Callahan testified he saw the defendant riding his bicycle, peering in the windows at night in an area of recent car prowls, and that is the connection between the defendant and the crime of car prowling, which was the reason that he was stopped. And it's also interesting to note that Judge Trickey was well aware of Martinez and similar cases, and he found in his oral ruling, this is not the kind of case where it's sort of a generalized, you know, it's a high crime neighborhood area, so I was on alert. The officer had a very specific reference to other car prowls not all that far distant from here and not that far removed in time. So Judge Trickey was perfectly aware that just looking nervous in a high-crime area at night was not sufficient basis, and found that under these facts, the basis was sufficient.
What did the record consist of? Once the suppression hearing occurred, then the defendant agreed to a stipulated trial. What was the record on the stipulated trial? Just the police reports?
I believe that is the case, the probable cause certification included. Now, I would be happy to address the bicycle helmet law and our position that it does apply to Shoreline and also on the sidewalk. By its express terms, the health code provision applies throughout King County, including Seattle. And Mr. Smith argues that the language including Seattle means that it doesn't apply to any other code cities in the county. And we would argue that that's contrary to the plain language of the statute, because including Seattle is not the same thing as and Seattle. And if the health board wanted to make this provision apply only in unincorporated King County and the city of Seattle, it could have said it applies in King County and Seattle, and that's not what they wrote. This plain language interpretation is also bolstered by the codified legislative findings of the health board, which identifies bicycle-related deaths and hospitalizations on a countywide basis, again saying the county, including Seattle. It argues for the need for universal helmet use, especially to prevent child deaths. It identifies expected cost savings if, quote, every cyclist in the county were to wear a helmet. The use of expansive terms like every cyclist indicates an intent to interpret this broadly, and in fact, in another provision of that health code regulation, it says that that provision is to be interpreted liberally to affect its purpose.
Council, let me ask you this. If other code cities within King County have their own ordinances on this issue that follow the King County pattern, would that affect the argument that you're making here? In other words, would that just be duplicating the ordinance that you think applies countywide?
It would. I think the answer to that would be, depend a bit on what those provisions might say. The health board regulation says nothing in this is to should be construed to mean that the code cities can't enact their own provisions. And it could well be the case that some cities would like to enact a harsher penalty for not wearing a helmet. Or
what if they're exactly the same?
I don't see anything that would suggest that it would not, that the health health board code of the King County would not still apply. As to the necessity defense issue, I'm comfortable relying on my briefs on that issue unless the court has any further questions about that or anything else. I will sit down. We ask the court to affirm and to hold that the trial court properly denied the motion to suppress and properly refused to instruct the jury on the defense of necessity. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Well, concerning the pretext stop, I think the officer wanted to talk to Mr. Smith because he was concerned about his behavior, about his riding the bicycle and looking in car windows. He did. I don't think he testified that he always issues that he had issued that he. What the prosecutor said that he had always stopped people for helmet violations. I think he said he had stopped for people for helmet violations. And the important part is, would he have done that here? Stopping people for help. I mean, it is a pretty minor. It's a civil fine which you get a $30 maximum fine. So it's the kind of thing where an officer would exercise his discretion about when he was going to talk to people about helmets and or not, depending on what else he's working on. So I don't think the record shows that the officer wanted to pull Mr. Smith over to talk to him about wearing a bicycle helmet.
Is there some case with which I'm unfamiliar, which is entirely possible, that somehow morphs this inquiry into some subjective inquiry about what this officer thought he was doing or not doing as distinct from what the facts would lead a reasonable officer under similar facts and circumstances with similar training to believe and justify in terms of the interference with the both privacy and movements of the defendant, which I would think would be the test. At least it's certainly the test for probable cause and remains the test. And I thought it was the same for a Terry stop, except for the issue of pretext. Is there any room for pretext, or is pretext just one of these variant doctrines we ought to ignore?
Well, you're absolutely right that the Terry stop test is completely objective, and the pretext test involves an objective and a subjective component.
So what do we do with that?
Well,
it seems to me nonsense.
I'm trying to remember what the test is, you know. But I think we do with it what we can, I guess.
That's a good answer.
That's but what we do.
Yeah, right. Well, I think we have. I mean, we look at the testimony that we have, and I think we know that his stock was based upon various things, that the helmet was really not. He was not stopping this man simply to talk to him about whether he's wearing a bicycle helmet or not. I think that's what we know. I don't think I have time to discuss the health board, which I have to admit I'm having a hard time finding what their jurisdiction is. So I would apologize for that.
I think it probably is difficult to discern what it is.
That's been my problem. So
I guess I could ask it this way, since I think I know the answer. Does Shoreline have its own health board?
No, I don't think so. They have a code, yeah.
And their code does not have anything about bicycle helmets in it, right? That's your argument.
I can't remember. I think you're right.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you.